Do you watch a lot of reality TV? The genre seems to have taken over the entertainment industry and become hugely influential on American culture and politics. But how did we get here? Joining us to tell that story is Emily Nussbaum, author of the new book, Cue the Sun, The Invention of Reality TV. Emily is a staff writer at The New Yorker and won the Pulitzer Prize for Criticism in 2016. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hello, this is Emily Nussbaum. I'm a staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, and I'm also the author of I Like to Watch, Arguing My Way Through the TV Revolution, and my new book, Cue the Sun, The Invention of Reality TV. I'm going to share with you five key insights from my book. Insight number one, reality television isn't new. So I first thought about writing a reported book about reality TV way back in 2003. At the time, Survivor was an established massive global blockbuster. The internet was still fairly new. And I had started watching a strange show in secret, streaming a series called Big Brother online and telling no one about it. The new entertainment genre seemed strange and fascinating and more than a little bit embarrassing to me, and it seemed like there might be a good book in it. But when I told my friend about the idea, he had one response. You better write that fast. He told me that reality was a fad. It would be gone in a year or two. By the time I got back around to writing about reality, it had become a muscular industry. It was going nowhere. But I still thought of it as a modern genre. I figured it went back to Survivor, or at the most, to the real world in the early 90s. And like a lot of other people, I viewed it as a symptom of cultural change. It seemed like there had been a rise in narcissism, and now that cameras were everywhere, even in our phones. But early in my research for this book, I realized that that wasn't true at all. These shows had a much longer lineage. And in fact, they went back 70 years to the age of the audience participation show, an earlier boom that took place on live radio. Back then, in the 1940s, these shows set off a moral shockwave that was nearly identical to the modern one in response to reality TV. Onlookers were riveted and appalled by the sound, and later on TV, by the sight of ordinary people spilling their secrets to the world. On some of the audience participation shows, civilians took dares or offered up funny stories. Others were called sob story formats, like Queen for a Day, on which women competed for who had the most terrible life, and the winner was decided by an applause meter in the audience. There was a show called Blind Date that featured soldiers and single women flirting through a wall, just as they would do years later on the dating game and Love is Blind. And then there was Candid Microphone, the first version of Candid Camera, a controversial prank show that shocked the world by secretly recording its subjects. Critics were generally grossed out by the audience participation shows. They saw them as vulgar, crude, and exploitative. Regular viewers couldn't get enough of them. Insight 2. Reality TV is a strike breaker. Why did reality stick around? One of the main reasons was that it was cheap. From a network perspective, it's a shrewd budgetary tactic, a way of churning out content without having to pay writers or actors. This was true early on when radio actors griped about having to compete with a bunch of unpaid nobodies. It was true in the late 1960s when a mop-top maniac named Chuck Barris infuriated Hollywood by rolling out cheap, salacious shows like The Newlywed Game and The Gong Show. It was also true in 1989 when a TV hopeful named John Langley, who couldn't seem to sell a show called Cops, finally got the go-ahead from Fox because they were desperate for content in the wake of a looming strike. But just because something is cheap doesn't mean it's not creative. In the early 1990s, MTV hoped to make a scripted soap opera about people in their 20s living in New York. Then the network realized that to do that, they would have to pay writers and actors and work with unions, all of which was a no-go for a small cable channel. Instead, creative partners John Murray and Mary Ellis Bunim came up with a way to do the show at a much lower budget. They found seven strangers, then had them live in a house to find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real. In the process, they transformed television. The Real World became the first reality show to feel entirely modern, with a staged house that was surrounded by cameras, a diverse cast made up of people who'd never met, set up to fight and flirt with one another, a dizzy modern editing style, and also intimate confessionals. Insight number three, reality TV broke the rules. So here's how I define reality TV in Cue the Sun. It's what you get when you take cinema verite documentary, a fancy pants, highbrow, prestige cinematic discipline that requires an artist to set up a camera and then quietly wait for something truthful to emerge. And you cut cinema verite documentary as if cutting a drug with a faster, more aggressive, more commercial TV formula, something that can be repeated over and over again. That might be a game show, it could be a soap opera or a prank show. Sometimes, as with the brilliantly innovative format for Survivor, it was all three of them combined. Either way, a great reality creator knows how to build a system that can reliably put pressure on cast members instead of just waiting for them to do something. Breaking the rules by squeezing out shocking, moving, or funny responses by any means necessary. The main rule that reality TV broke was the obvious one, though. It turned regular people into celebrities. And that was a shock to the entire culture. One of my favorite chapters in the book is about a 1973 show called An American Family, an experimental documentary on PBS about a single family in California, Bill and Pat Loud and their five teenage children. In certain ways, An American Family actually doesn't look like a reality show in the way that I've been describing. It was dreamy and slow-paced, and it was also pretty expensive. It was actually supposed to be a cinema verite documentary, which aired on a fancy network. But it captured subject matter that absolutely shocked American viewers. A mother asking for a divorce on camera, her openly gay son, the wildly charismatic Lance Loud, living in downtown New York in the Chelsea Hotel. The way the media and the public reacted to An American Family turned it into the first reality show train wreck. And the Louds themselves became the first true reality stars, famous for being famous. I interviewed the remaining Louds, and also I interviewed the Raymonds, the married couple who filmed them for the show. These two parties are not speaking anymore. The experience of going through An American Family wound up splitting everyone apart. Insight 4. Pay complete attention to the people behind the camera. My book includes profiles and interviews with the people who built some of the biggest reality hits, including swashbuckling piratical entrepreneurs like Candid Camera creator Alan Funt, Gong Show host Chuck Barris, John Langley, the man behind Cops, John Murray and Mary Ellis Bunim, who created The Real World, Fox mastermind Mike Darnell, Mike Fleiss and Lisa Levinson, who invented The Bachelor, and Survivor producer Mark Burnett. These people were a group of eccentric, pugnacious Barnums. They were willing to cross all sorts of lines to get their shows made. But I was equally interested in everyone else who worked in the reality genre. And during my research, I interviewed more than 300 of them. Many cast members, but also field producers, camera and audio operators, casting people, task creators, and editors. Most of whom had to create their jobs from scratch because these kinds of shows didn't exist when they started working. The field producers talked to me about the craft of their job, about getting cast members to open up, getting them to cry on camera. The camera operators described filming starving castaways on a desert island for the first season of Survivor. And there were reality editors who bragged to me about their craft, including dark arts, like the Frankenbite, in which you take a few unrelated sounds and then stitch them into a sentence that no one has ever said. Really, what people watch when they watch reality shows is actually a collaboration. Only one side is invisible. Every bit of drama you see on screen is actually the residue of the deep, complex, creative, and sometimes unsettling and imbalanced relationship between the people on camera and the people behind it. Insight 5. The faker reality is, the more ethical it is. Some of the most powerful aspects of reality television, the shocking and poignant moments of surprise, the strong feelings like fear or love that come across on people's faces, are genuinely authentic ones. And a lot of the power of watching a reality show comes from seeing the mixture of fake and real, the crafty way that people who make these shows blend authentic elements with contrived ones. But a lot of what made the shows that I write about in this book so powerful, and also, frankly, so unnerving, was that the cast members genuinely had no idea what they were getting into when they signed up to make the show. Again, because no shows like this had ever existed before. And the more naive a cast member was, the realer their response was. As the reality industry has grown, cast members, not all of them, but many of them, have gotten significantly savvier. Anyone who tries out for Survivor is a fan of Survivor. And the same is generally true for a show like The Bachelor. A big chunk of young people live their lives in public, acting as their own reality producers, playing themselves on Instagram and on social media. For economic reasons, many scripted shows have also gotten far more artificial. They're what people in the industry call soft scripted. And here I'm talking about shows like The Real Housewives and The Kardashians, where the stars step up to do what are essentially arch, campy performances of their own lives in deep collaboration with the people who are filming them. So they're more like scripted actresses, although they certainly don't get the same type of pay or any of the residuals. In the end, that's become the perverse conundrum of reality programming. The faker a show is, the more ethical it is. For so many decades, innocence had been the secret sauce of reality production. Lately, that's in short supply. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Emily. That was Emily Nussbaum with five big ideas from Cue the Sun, The Invention of Reality TV. You might also like our book bite for It's Not TV, The Spectacular Rise, Revolution, and Future of HBO by Felix Gillette and John Koblin. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.